Hello, and welcome to Raising Anchor, your podcast and source for all things Rhode Island FC. I'm your host, Matt Entrican, coming to you on this Thursday, May 29th. RIFC continues to struggle against the Pittsburgh side, resulting in their first ever regular season loss at Centerville Bank Stadium. The saving grace, the Amber and Blue, get the immediate rematch this weekend, away to Highmark Stadium in the Jägermeister Cup. Can Kano's men finally find the back of the net against Lily Ball? Well, we're going to find out tonight. Joining me as always and continuing to hold it down at the Rap Studios is the one and only co-host, Mr. Jason Carey. Jason, how is it going, my friend?
Not too bad. Doing good. A little confused here, though. I thought we agreed to just repeat the last podcast when we lost to Pittsburgh. Just play it over again. No one would have known, right?
You know, when I was building the slides out for tonight's show, I started looking at the formation selections. And while I mostly have Rhode Island FC set up to kind of repeat either this catastrophe looming or to find a way to finally prove that the system works, I still think Bob Lilly may actually do some chopping and some changing, some micro adjustments on the Riverhound side. So it'll be interesting. And then plus, because it's Jägermeister Cup, we have to take a shot at glory ourselves. Did you get your, I didn't get my Jägermeister in the mail. I thought you were going to send it to me. I guess Hawaii shipping prices are a little too expensive.
Yeah. The actual price of sending the Jäger to you there, I could, you know, buy a Jäger shot for everyone in Defiance. It's out of control.
I went to buy a rice cooker since I've been here for a while. We'll continue to be here for a little bit longer. And I'm kind of embarrassed that I did it, but I went to Target and everything in Hawaii is significantly more expensive. Obviously, logistically, it's a problem. Unless you're buying like mangoes or pineapples, it's a problem, Jason. And went to go buy a rice cooker. And I know the price of a rice cooker. I've bought several in my lifetime and saw it on the shelf. And I was like, either the tariffs and the inflation has hit us hard or something is not right here. Went on Amazon and retail, like immediate consumption prices were like $15 more for the same rice cooker online. So I hate to not support local retail, but that thing's coming, should be here tonight. Probably interrupt this podcast as we talk.
You know, sometimes you just got to do what you got to do to save that buck. We and money doesn't grow on trees, unfortunately. So
podcast isn't making us millions of dollars yet.
Yeah, right, somehow I keep spending more money on this. Not making any.
I will never financially recover. Let's get straight into this. This should be a pretty straightforward episode for us, much to how you were pointing out, a lot of the same. I think there's going to be some really interesting things to talk about, though, when we recap the match here. But first and foremost, how about you walk listeners through the exciting news going on in Jojea Aquazera's world?
Yeah, so Jojea, of course, here got another call up for the friendly matches here versus Algeria in the June FIFA windows. Also, if you take a look at the list, one Kavita Fanuel, probably didn't say that right, but a Birmingham Legion player there as well. So we get some, USL supremacy there. So good to see we're getting some representation there worldwide. I was kind of thinking when I saw this about Jojea Aquazera's season so far, I kind of looked at his stats and kind of just took a stock of how I felt about him so far this year. And I was curious how you think he's been doing. I think he put a very high bar for himself with his performances last year. And I don't want to insinuate in any way that he's been bad this year, but I don't think he's really lived up to what we kind of expect from him. How are you feeling about Jojea so far this year?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting comparison because you can't do the apples to apples like we would have been able to do if he had stayed on that left side primarily. Now in this right side inverted winger, he's playing a different game than what he was responsible for doing. You know, we've talked at length this year about how he's now kind of responsible to cut in and take a look at goal a little bit more often, but the reality, too, is that he's not taking on the right side of that defensive back line against our opposition. You know, if you look and if you macro this out to the, you know, last 10 games, you'll see that there's a lack of kind of depth when it comes to moving up the right flank. A lot of the ball movement this year so far, at least in the vertical channels, has either been centrally or it's been coming through Aldair Sanchez. It's almost like Sanchez's role is to bomb up the left and make a ball available for Georgia to maybe have a look at goal and take a shot. But we're not seeing that one-on-one comfortability that he had last year. I don't know if it's like he's better with his left foot at dribbling and getting down the flank on a wing. And now when he's relying on his right foot to shoot, it's not the same. I'm not quite sure from the technicality side of that, but we're seeing a completely different version of him so far this season. It's not a bad version, but you know, we're not seeing like what I would call the final mile of him getting all the way up to the far post and looking at like a dangerous cross from the right side. When we've seen him produce any kind of cross or assist opportunity, it's usually been when he's flipped and they move him back to his more natural left side. Long term, I mean, this has obviously been a requirement where Aldair's been so good that we need him. And then with the struggles we've had on the right side so far this season, I wouldn't be against it. But then you also look at Noah Fusson, same thing. He's now in the winger side on the left side, not a wing back per se, but he only has one goal in like 800 minutes. Like technically, I know he's not a forward, but from our offensive line, him and Quisera are at our worst numbers of the season so far. It's weird that you asked me that because I have a stat a little later because I know how much hate and vitriol is going against Chico this year so far. But Quisera and Fusson significantly underperforming in their goal contributions already this season.
Yeah, I'm curious. Hopefully, maybe some time away with the his national team, do him a little good. Maybe we get some rotation in here too. Like you said, very much our forward line kind of struggling this year so far.
Yeah, and Scott already has in the chat was my question to you. Obviously, with this call-up, he'll be missing a match against the Miami FC at home here at Centerville Bank Stadium next week. With so many points kind of left behind so far this season, and I wouldn't say we've established ourselves as the dominant force in the East that we were towards the back half of last season. I mean, obviously we know country before club is going to be the answer, but is this the right time for Georgia to be leaving? And if he is, which I mean, he will be leaving, what do we need for him to get from a confidence standpoint playing against Algeria in a week?
I mean, yeah, if he can get himself some good performances against Algeria, maybe even get himself some sort of goal contribution, whether that be an assist or goal, come back, bring that swagger back to the USL Championship, then maybe that could be productive. With the World Cup looming, I feel like you can't really blame any players right now for really wanting to like go after those club caps, because you know, when it comes back to actual qualifiers, maybe if he turns this down, maybe they won't call him back again. He won't have that opportunity to prove himself. So I, you know, it's unfortunate, but I, you know, just kind of have to, you know, let him do what he needs to do for his career ultimately.
Yeah. And Tim has it in the chat. He beat me to it, but you know, we saw sparks of brilliance kind of manifest themselves against opponents after Quisera came back from some of his international assignments. So potentially this could be the kickstart to something great. I know I saw in the chat a minute ago, you know, jokes Quisera, but I kind of like your nickname for him. So if he gets a brace or a hat trick, I think we need to call him the Rwandan Swagger moving forward. So I don't hate that whatsoever. But speaking of that Miami game that he is going to miss, it's important, I think, that we really quickly just, you know, let people know if they're not following along, since, you know, Rhode Island FC retweeted it, but nothing else really has gone out. And it's so far away that it feels like maybe it's not that important in the moment. But the match against Miami away to Mr. Worldwide Stadium has been rescheduled. We're now moving from that 9:20 Saturday game now to a midweek. It's a Wednesday game, 9:17. So, you know, you're coming off of a game against Indy at home, now on a short rest. You go play away to Mr. Worldwide. Then you come back, and then you've got a 10-day break before going to El Paso to take on a very good-looking Locomotive. I know it's going to be so many months down the road. You know, it's so late in the season, you can't do much else about it. But is this kind of a disadvantage for the team that has to travel to move this from a home game or a home to away 7 days later now to an away game with just short rest?
And so the worst part is it's actually not at Mr. Worldwide Stadium. It's the FIU soccer stadium. So I guess apparently that is different.
That's why they're rematching. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if there's, you know, some sort of event going on. So, I mean, that's kind of a downer for the team. I imagine they, you know, really wanted to make an appearance at Mr. Worldwide Stadium, especially because this might be the last time with their plans to set themselves up in Homestead. It is unfortunate, but then I guess you also get that additional rest afterwards. So maybe you just kind of, it really depends on also where we are in the season, right? If we're fighting tooth and nail, and if it's very much like last year, where there are like table places at stake, depending on how results go, maybe this could be a bit of an issue. If the league has kind of already been decided, there's enough point gap between where we are and where maybe we want to be, then it might just be is what it is kind of situation.
Hard to say. I look at it more as like the circadian rhythm of a player's football calendar, right? Like 7 days play, 7 days play, show up for those big moments. Now, 3 day rest, play, and then 10 days off. I mean, you hear about it all the time in playoffs where teams get that first week bye, and it's like there's something about not playing football every single week that just, you know, it messes up their state of mind, I guess. So it'll be interesting to see. It'll suck if that's like at a point where points matter more, especially considering the run of form that Bill Hamid and the rest of the Portland Timbers from 2016 are on right now. You hate to see it, but we'll have to wait till time will tell on that one.
Yeah, bit of a wait and see there, I think, ultimately.
So let's talk about the game itself. Obviously not a great match. We'll go into kind of length. We kind of talked about it on the Monday mailbag, but always wanted to save like our more, you know, we've rewatched the game. We've taken a measured approach for Thursday. But, you know, before we jump into it, how was the stadium overall? Like, what was the vibe check at Centerville Bank?
Yeah, it was a good time. You know, showed up early, hung out with the fans, the Defiance, 1636, always a great time. Got some classic New England weather, couldn't decide whether it wanted to be a rainy day or not. You know, there's a funny moment where we are all kind of getting ready to pack up and head to the stadium, and then it just started to pour for like 5 to 10 minutes. So we all just found pop-up tents to hide under for a few minutes. I mean, you missed out. The Welch's had plenty of sliders that had your name on it, and you just, I don't know, decided to be like 5,000 miles away or something. I don't know.
You didn't save them for me. You didn't eat them to regurgitate them later for me, baby bird style. I'm hurt. I'm disappointed.
I definitely made sure I got some for myself. You know, you can live vicariously through my enjoyment.
Listen, Jason, I've been on enough airplanes to know that the first thing you do is put the air mask on yourself, and then you take care of anyone that's incapable of doing it for themselves. So you're doing what needed to be done, and I respect that. And the Welches are within striking distance of where I live, so they're just going to get a random knock on the door one night when I get back and be like, hey, do you have any sliders? And that'll be it. So, oh, they're even in the chat calling me out on it now, too. So I'm sure I lost extra Defiance points for not being there. But let's get into this. Rhode Island FC falls to the Pittsburgh Riverhounds 0-1. Jason, it's their first loss ever in the regular season against Rhode Island FC here at Centerville Bank Stadium. I know, you know, the Revolution fans were all over me when I reported. It's like, oh, it's not their first loss. It's the
doesn't
first
count.
Loss
of the Open Cup.
It's the first loss of the championship season. That not only is it a loss, but that first half goal snapped a season-long 290-minute shutout streak for Rhode Island FC, and it was just the second goal conceded in the last 5 games. If you think about that, we've only allowed now 2 goals in the regular season at Centerville Bank, and the worst part is it breaks an almost unbeaten record when it comes to the performances in the month of May. Jason, we failed to win against the Riverhounds again. We've never drawn against them. We only know how to lose against this team. We've yet to find the goal against Bob Billy's side. This may be the most frustrating opponent, not on the highest of our radars when it comes to the attitude or the fan base, like I'm thinking like a Detroit City FC, but fans still haven't seen a win at home. Tensions are starting to get high. They're ratcheting up as people want to see success here. They want to see this stadium pop off. with all of these frustrations growing, with all of this difficulty and the fact that there's a rematch coming this weekend, what did we learn from this game? If you're Coach Conno Smith driving home to your pad, what are you taking away from this match?
It's hard to say. It feels very much like a lot of the other matches that we played against them. Very frustrating. It felt as if, you know, that goal with standing, if you took that out, felt like a 0-0 draw, right? And that's very much what they would be comfortable with, right? I think they revel in frustrating opponents. That's very much Lily Ball there. But, you know, one kind of unfortunate moment where Koke Vegas kind of had his view blocked, maybe. And I don't know, we talked a little bit about this on Monday. I don't know if I want to be a little too hard on any one particular player here. It's very unfortunate, right? Maybe some of the defenders could have been a little quicker about closing that gap to make sure that Griffin didn't get his shot off as well, or at least try to deflect it out of bounds or something. But at that point, you know, when you go down against the Bob Lilly side, they're going to bunker in and they're going to make your life miserable. So especially with our scoring woes, it just kind of never felt like we were really going to get back into it. RAFC did create some decent chances here, but nothing actual of note. There's definitely some chances it felt like they maybe would have liked back. There was that Nodarce volley in the second half that just skimmed right past the top corner. There was a volley that from Aldair Sanchez to Maxi Rodriguez. I think that was in the first half where he hit it wide. You know, he kind of hit that straight on. Really would have forced Eric Dick to kind of make a save on that. With some luck, maybe would have scored there. You know, I wonder if this team was a little more in form in terms of scoring. Could have been of a 1-1. Maybe, but we also haven't scored against them, so it's really hard to say.
Does a goal almost feel like a victory in and of itself at this point? Like,
oh, absolutely. Jubilation? At this point, like it's got to be, you know, incremental steps, right? Our first target, score against the Pittsburgh Riverhounds.
I mean,
you know, and there we can build upon that.
And we'll talk about the effectiveness of what Bob Lilly does when he scores. But first, let's go through the starting 11 for this team. You know, we were pretty close to it. I think the only real surprise here was understanding, you know, moving forward, is it going to be Amos Shapiro-Thompson that kind of started to continue to solidify his spot? Or was it going to be a return to the Holstead-Herivo double pivot? But walk listeners through who the starting 11 were.
Yeah, so as always, Koke Vegas and net. That back line consisting of Aldair Sanchez, Aime Mabika, Grant Stoneman, and Frank Nodarce. Our holding midfielders there, Zach Herivo and Clay Holstad, the three attacking midfielders in front of them, Noah Fusan, Maxi Rodriguez, and Joje Quizera, with the one and only Chico up top. That bench consisting of Jackson Lee, Joseph Brito, Rio Hope Gund, Taimu Okiyoshi, Amos Shapiro-Thompson, Cole Dewhurst, and Karifa Yao.
Jason, is there any reason why Amos Shapiro-Thompson shouldn't have been getting the start for this match? I mean, he's literally a dog against the Riverhounds, and with the tenacity and the way he's been hunting, was this team set up for success out the start? I mean, obviously, this feels like the most offensive, right now, team that we could build and field, but would we have been better off with a little bit more of a defensive flair and the likes of someone like Amos on the pitch?
It's hard to say. While Amos has been really well, like done really well recently, I think part of what he's like brought to the pitch is just pure energy. Against a very like structured Bob Lilly side, I don't know if that necessarily would be what like would have saved us. I'm pretty happy with the squad that he put out. Like I said, I think that it's really unfortunate that we gave up that one goal. Outside from that, you know, they did hit the post one time, but I don't know if anything was too dangerous from Pittsburgh. I think Koke Vegas has been coming up really big lately, and he kind of kept us in the match there. So I think it very easily could have just been a 0-0 draw.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. Like, we know going into it, just kind of breaking down the stats and how this game really transformed into what Bob Lilly does best. Danny Griffin gets that shot at range, a little bit of traffic there. Obviously, it impedes Koke's ability to pick the shot out in the line. And, you know, he freezes because he can't see it until it's too late. 90% of the time, a ball like that in the traffic, it doesn't make it, right? It deflects. It goes, it gets blocked, something. But it puts Pittsburgh up. And then we've talked about this now at length against this team. The last thing you ever want is Bob Lilly to have a lead over you as the opponent, because he only does one thing, and it's, I'm going to bunker, I'm going to set the low block, and I'm going to absorb the pressure. And then if I can catch you back out of shape and in transition, we'll try to look forward. But not the case here. I mean, this game felt very one-dimensional after the goal got scored. It was, you know, I don't want to say Pittsburgh, you know, parked the bus, but that's kind of what happened here.
Yeah, classic Jose Mourinho style, you know, just as soon as you go up, just put that bus right in front of the net. To their credit, though, they do press very well. They made life very frustrating for RAFC, and I just don't think they had an answer to really break them down. And I think that's really been the problem against playing against these type of teams, right? We have the lion's share of possession, as we've seen here so far this year. They will, 500 passes again here, but they just didn't have that incisive pass and that kind of last hurrah into the third, the final third, to actually create anything of value. I think this, a lot of, comes down to our offense. They aren't firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, agreed. And when you look at not just the shots on target, which I know Rhode Island FC Communications would try to positively spin as like, well, we took 15 shots to their 10. Our XG was 1.1 to their 0.45. I look at it as also, the total number of crosses, right? Right now, without a JJ Williams on this team, and normally it's not Noah in the center of the box, we don't see a lot of benefit. I think we've only had one successful cross conversion so far this season, and I think it was in the last Jägermeister Cup round from from Noah to Chico. And so we have struggled mightily, I'm sorry, it was the Oakland Roots game, but we've struggled mightily to find successful crosses. We're accurate, like we're finding the head of a Rhode Island FC player, but we're not converting those into goals. And full credit to Pittsburgh here, whether or not they shut things down and locked it up, there was a lot of things that happened well for Rhode Island in terms of probing. But the reality was that the person that kept Pittsburgh in this game was Eric Dick. Rhode Island FC, on the 500 passes to the 328, they still forced 5 saves from goalkeeper Eric Dick, which has not happened a lot this season for this Pittsburgh side. Normally, they collectively grab the ball a little bit further up than their own final third. And the reality, too, when I say park the bus, this was the worst stat I found in kind of some of the analytics. Did you know that Pittsburgh didn't register a shot from the 45th minute to the 87th minute in the second half?
That's I don't know what to say at this point. I guess I can only laugh, but that's the fact that we couldn't find a way to at least claw one back, get ourselves a tie. It's very disappointing,
But without talking about the scoring, and this is what I really want to lean into, do teams not find us dangerous anymore? Like, if we go straight into the next topic, which is possession, we were talking just last week how this seems to be kind of the new characteristic that we've added this year. We saw earlier in the season, it was the long ball, finding, Koke to JJ to bypass the high press at times. We didn't know if that was just because of the new players in the rotation. So when in doubt, go, the number one route. But now, fourth game in a row, we have 500 passes, 60% possession. Again, I think we average now 58% possession across 4 games. We're not doing anything with it. Do teams no longer need to worry about Rhode Island FC if we're not this explosive counterattacking team that we were last season. Because right now, it seems like the MO is teams are quickly recognizing. It's like, hey, Rhode Island, hold the ball. We'll wait till you do something and then see where things go from there.
Until our offense starts scoring some more goals, I think that very much could be the case, that they don't find us as threatening and they say, all right, that's fine. We'll let you have the ball. Because at this point, we don't know that you're going to necessarily do anything with it. I mean, we've had some success away, right? But also, maybe some of that, like if we're being honest with ourselves, maybe are against some teams that aren't that great, right? If we're being like the previous match against Tampa, all three of those goals, their defenders did not step up. They gave us the time of day to just prep those shots. And, you know, if no one's going to close you down the way like a Pittsburgh did against us and really made our lives difficult, well, why not take those shots? Pittsburgh didn't give us the time of day to take those shots. They got in our face. They pressed us back, pushed us out wide, kind of forced us to send in crosses that really didn't connect to anyone. So, or connected to people who maybe are just not scoring them right now, you know, without our talismanic forward. But yeah, I don't know if people really would be afraid of this Rhode Island squad right now. Clearly there's some caution, right? We're in sixth place. It's not, the world's not over. This is not a terrible team, right? It's a very frustrating game, but we've clearly scored some goals. There is something here in this squad. But we're definitely in a process of trying to figure out how to get the best out of this squad with the players available right now.
Yeah, I mean, we're technically fifth worst in the Eastern Conference in terms of goals for just 10 goals. We're at a zero goal differential, 10 goals for, 10 goals against. If you look at the total of the league, we're actually the seventh worst in terms of goal production so far this season. I don't quite know. I mean, the segue here for me, looking at from what we have written for the notes, is that we've talked at length that this is a team that typically is a first half team. And when they score first, positive things happen, points are earned. And then when they don't score in the second half, it's usually a lost or a throwaway game. The interesting thing, though, too, in combination with that, though, is we've actually failed to score in 5 of 10 matches. So not only do we have a second half problem, but we also have a problem where if we don't get one goal, you know, we're not getting a second goal. When we do, that's great. But all of our goals are being produced in only half of our games. So there's a shooting consistency. There's a scoring problem this team has. And sure, we can say, oh, well, JJ's not there, so that's your answer. Or, oh, we don't have a third striker, so that's your answer. But some of these players need to step up. I promise we'll talk about Chico here in a minute, so I'm going to cautiously avoid that topic. But like, we had goals being scored by a plethora of our players last year. Frank Nadarce was, I think, our third or fourth highest scoring player as a defender. When we don't have a JJ Williams, and we didn't have him all season last year either, and Chico went through these same problems, goals were coming from other conduits. Is it unreasonable to ask for these other players to step up in a bigger way at this point? Or do we, I mean, because fans are already asking for heads here, or do we have to blame it on the people whose job it is to put these goals in the back of the net?
It's a team game. There are certain players who are expected to score more, but the reality is goals can come from any one of players. And like you had mentioned, Frank Nadarce last year was a really big threat for us on set pieces. So we look at this and think, all right, we're not scoring goals. You know, is the root of this cause or problem chance creation? Are we just not creating good chances? Is that maybe the issue? Like, are we doing quantity over quality, right? Are we just sending in a bunch of crosses, hoping someone will do something with them? They're accurate. They're getting to someone, but maybe they're not a great chance because we are playing too slowly, right? We're letting the opposition get back into formation. So even though that cross is getting to someone, there's someone there to kind of make a play on that. You know, when I think of RFC last year being their most dangerous, I think of them more as a transition team, right? Luring teams in, kind of some quick passes through the midfield out wide to Jojea. He cuts back a pass in to someone at the top of the box and they put it into the back of the net or something like that. You know, it doesn't always have to be a counterattack with pure speed, because I don't think we have anyone with just pure unadulterated speed like that. But it's a general kind of forward momentum that would carry us, where we're not moving the ball forward and then it's like, let's bring it back and pass it around for a while and poke and prod. And we're seeing that with this team a little bit more, that they're being a little bit more possession based, maybe not taking the chances, going the more safe route. And some of those opportunities that they're creating are just not of high quality.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the field tilt of last season, it was like a seesaw, right? It would go back and forth. You'd see all of these opportunities as there was quick transitions. And Rhode Island FC was just as quick to lose the ball as they were to marshal it up the pitch. This season, with this, you know, intent behind holding onto the ball, you know, these possession stats hurt field tilt when it comes to those switches and those wanting to change the game, change the direction, change the trajectory. So I'm glad that we can hold the ball. It's a good thing to see. But to your point, if we're not doing anything with it, it's almost like just give the ball back. I mean, we've seen coaches do that where it's like, we don't want the ball, so we're gonna get it safely out, take a dangerous, you know, step forward without committing bodies, and then bring it back, and that's where we're going to hurt you, is on our own version of the counter. I don't know if this team is still set up to do that, moving from the traditional 3-5-2 to this, you know, 4-2-3-1 that we currently are in, but it doesn't feel like Coach Cano has answers. And, you know, I know it's hard to say where it's like, well, we just won two games prior to this Pittsburgh match. But again, like you said, Jason, against lower teams, this tactic works. But against the teams that are really good in their own tactics or are at least neutral in their standings, like right now, we're not doing well against teams that are in the hunt for a playoff berth this season. And I don't know. I mean, we've never seen Cano switch his tactics until this year. But are we in store for another switch? Like, with the players he has, what else do you do with this formation and with this style of play?
It's hard to say, because, you know, we suffered last year through a very kind of painful, slow start to the season. And we were just kind of happy, excited, hopeful. And, you know, part of me still thinks that maybe we just got to kind of turn the corner. We just got to get to mid-June or something. And everything will, like,
that magic month.
Yeah, and then maybe everything will just kind of fall into place. You know, maybe he's been working on this and it's just kind of almost there kind of thing. It's hard to say. I think if we get towards the end of June and we're still kind of up and down, bit of a seesaw, maybe he'll look at trying to see if there's any kind of minimal changes he can make without completely ripping up the book, because at that point it'd be too late to blow up the entire team, right? And I mean, remember, we're still in sixth place.
That's the worst part of it. That's the worst part, is that there's so much scream and anger out there because of one very lackluster game and then a series of mid performances at home, but yet It's what you're not seeing, because, you know, let's be honest, the casual fans are only going at best to the Centerville Bank Stadium. They're not watching the games away. They're getting the highlights or checking the standings. Like, this team has been remarkable pretty much on the road so far. We're just not seeing it converted back here at home. And we did struggle with this last season. So it's perplexing. It's confusing. I just hope that Cano can get out of his own way if he needs to evolve the tactics. If the rest of the league has finally caught up to us, he needs to be the man that can acknowledge that and do the iterations or the changes that are needed to see this team succeed.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I want to ask, Grant Stoneman, was he a hero or a villain in this last game? Obviously man of the match for some of his defensive clearances, but kind of some of the things I saw were him creating the liabilities to begin with. obviously you can't take three or four individual moments and hold them to the rest of the game. But should people be as high on Grant Stoeman after that match? Or is this an opportunity for Kreefe Yao, independent of the Jägermeister Cup, to try to get back into that starting 11 and in that back line?
I mean, he came up with that, the clearance, you know, to save us.
But he created it. Jason, he created that problem.
Yeah, you know, it's fine. I wouldn't be like, people make mistakes, and he took ownership of and took care of it. Like, at that point, you'd rather see that than someone make a mistake, put their hands in their head and be like, oh man, I can't believe I gave that away. Like, no, continue the play on, make up for that mistake, right? It happens, and he didn't allow that mistake to turn into a goal. So if anything, I'm more happy and to see the response from him that he was able to continue the play and then from there make a play to prevent a goal. So I think he's probably, honestly, we've mentioned this a few times. It looked like he's been a little worn out this season, almost like he needs some rest. Maybe with a Kreefe Yao coming back, we can kind of give him a little bit of time to kind of rest up there. You know, it seems like he's been wearing a lot of KT tape. So,
yeah, I mean, I was just going to say he was out for what, 7-8 weeks last season for some knee related injuries. So, and then he came back looking good. He was out actually in that period, late April, returning in like early to late June. So, I mean, maybe Grant Stoeman doesn't do good with spring games, and he just needs to wait till we're into full summer and get that heat into the leg.
Yeah, the winter's too cold on his knees. It takes a while to defrost.
I knew Grant Stoeman was a snowbird. I just didn't know it was that bad. All right, let's get into this. It's the thing that everyone is like just clamoring online. I've gotten several emails about it. Lots of people disagreeing with me about our take on Chico. I'm going to say it first and foremost. Let's just inflame the group. Chico is definitely in a drought. Chico's definitely, he's not doing well, but he is not the worst striker in the league. He's not even the worst of the forward attack on this team. And I think that while he needs to improve, it's not ready for him to see the pine just yet.
Yeah, absolutely not. I think that he's just going through a bit of some struggles right now. And if, like, this happened last year too, right? He would go through some struggles. He would have some issues, but then, you know, he would kind of go up and down. And strikers are streaky like that. He needs the opportunity. I think that similarly to our home form, once we finally get that win, once we finally start getting those goals, it's just everything's going to be fine and we'll just move forward and we'll kind of forget about those issues that we had. But until he gets, you know, that confidence boost that he needs, I think he's just going to continue to struggle. And then, like you'd mentioned, the rest of the forward line on our team is not helping him out either, right? They're really not making his life easier. There's some issues with chance creation. None of the other strikers have been scoring any goals. You know, I don't know why, you know, like, why are not people not being as hard on Noah, right? Do people just like Noah better? You know, I mean, I think that he's kind of had a disappointing season so far too.
Noah's numbers are completely off the chart in a very bad way. If you look at him in comparison to the rest of the league, he's towards the like bottom 10 percentile. Chico is in like he's right at like the halfway line, a little bit actually further above the halfway line in terms of percentages from a striker perspective. But like, I'm going to throw this is just a comparison between him and JJ. And I know as people start to talk about it, like going, well, that's not fair. You know, JJ Williams only has 390 minutes now this season, whereas Chico's got 647. But by that same comparison, Noah Fusson's played just about every single minute of the season at 805 so far, and his numbers are much further off the table. In fact, I can even throw the one where we add Quisera and Fusson. I'm hesitant to throw this out there because as wingers, they have a different responsibility than as true forwards. So, like, you know, we could look at that and say, like, well, Chico's actually, you know, thriving. But back to this one, you know, first and foremost, I want to talk about, we've talked at length with Chico about, is he suffering from a lack of two strikers into the system because he's this natural, you know, soccer poacher with this high level IQ, being the right place, being the right time. It's that luck factor, Jason, that makes some of the strikers around this world be the best version of themselves. Some can just shoot from anywhere, like Clay Holstead's, and some are just in the right place at the right time. I think of in the U.S. terminology, the Chris Wondolowski's of the world, minus, you know, the 2014 World Cup. Some strikers are just, they're gifted with being in the right place at the right time. But when you look at Chico's numbers overall, like you said, in regular season, so not in the Jägermeister Cup or Open Cup, he currently leads the team in goal contributions. One goal, so he's one behind J.J. Williams. J.J. Williams, only two goals, but two assists. So he's at three goal contributions. He has 13 total shots so far taken this season, and this is the number that hurts him the most, right? He only has 13. J.J. already has 15 looks at net with, you know, for 60% of the minutes. So he's not a player that's creating enough chances and enough shots for himself. But here's the crazy part. When I went and looked at his shot accuracy and his shot conversions, Chico is currently leading the league in accuracy of shots on target in terms of total shots, if when you compare it to any forward that has at least 10 looks at goal. So if any forward is in the double-digit range, Chico has the highest shot accuracy in the league right now. And I was like, there's no way he's beating Cal Jennings. There's no way he's beating Wilmer Cabrera Jr. He's leading the league. It's like, it's a stupid step, Jason. However, with the good comes the bad, and this is the Achilles heel for the guy right now. His conversion rate on those shots, just 7%, the worst striker in the league. So the best striker for looks on goal. The
duality of man.
The worst striker on conversions. So when he's getting, he's putting it on frame. It's just the luck of he's putting it right at the keeper. The keepers are making this. I mean, we've seen this. We've seen, like, I think in the last week, two or three really good runs, like goals that should get scored every single time that just don't find their way into the net. What do you do? I mean, he's getting the service. What do you do with a striker that has that? Comparatively, by the way, because I brought up Jennings and Cabrera, 38% conversions into goals right now. Their shot conversions are the best in the league right now. Obviously, Cal Jennings on a tear. But what do you do with a striker that knows how to put the ball on frame but just can't get it in the net?
I don't know. Stop being an Arsenal supporter. Just joking, Chico. You know, maybe he's been a bit unlucky there. Maybe we just need to kind of convert, like create a few more chances to just kind of get that dumb luck where it just bounces off your shin or something, you know, those silly goals, just to get one or two more under his belt to say, okay, like, yeah, no, I got this. I can score. But the fact that he's getting them on attempt, but you know, like I remember one of those attempts, I think at the, I think it was most recently, his Pittsburgh game. Like, he had the opportunity. He just didn't get the power behind it. Right. I don't know if he just didn't get his planting foot right. It just, there was not enough power. But you know, it's tough. And I mean, you know, Kaylor brings up a good point there too. Like, I don't know if people pay enough attention to how much work he puts in off the ball. Like, that there's more, it's really frustrating that he's not scoring goals, but the amount of work that he does off the ball is, you know, really important to this team and the way that coach wants to play in regards to pressing and like being positionally sound and kind of moving the ball forward. And the reality is JJ is injured right now. We don't have a
timeout. I want to ask a question because I wasn't at the game and there was conversations at length across all of the different spaces and the Koha corner, the one we did. A lot of the argument was that when we talk about his positioning and the way he was setting himself up for success in this last match, that Kano wasn't buying what Chico was selling. I know Kano is an animated coach. If you ever listen to the broadcast at maximum volume, you can hear him over the actual play-by-play callers a majority of the time, especially at Centerville Bank Stadium. But everyone was telling me earlier this week that this was different. There was a directed tenacity, a directed angst against Chico's positioning, Chico's movement this entire game, almost like he wasn't listening to the instructions of Coach Kano. I don't know from your positioning, especially if you were that close to Defiance, if you could have even heard that. Did you see that on the pitch? Because that's the difference, right? Like, if you're just a striker, and also to Scott's point, we are not talking about Chico's luck. Good strikers that do that kind of thing, they know where to set themselves up based on the way the teams position themselves, based on where the attack runs are going to be, and knowing how to, like, find the space to just be there. Sure, there's a bit, like, of the ball has to find you, but we're talking about, like, soccer positioning more than the luck here. Chico obviously took advantage of that with his Pittsburgh time, but there's more to it than just luck. But anyways, back to it. Did you see Coach Kano angry at Chico in this game?
I have noticed that Kano is very animated, yelling instructions. I kind of was paying attention more to the play. I mean, if you're telling me that he was directing his ire towards Chico, you know, I would believe you, especially considering he, you know, hasn't performed to expectations this year, right? It's so frustrating, what do we do with one striker?
Well, okay, so this is the question, right? Because everyone on here is now calling us apologists. Everyone wants to know about the potential loanee of a MLS striker that I had mentioned earlier in the week. What do you do to fix this? Because I'm not going to excuse Chico. We need players when we have a drought, when we have others injured. We need those players to step up. Chico is not someone who fights for minutes. He's supposed to be a lock-on starter. What do we need to see from Chico's game to improve this? Do we need a second striker? We've talked at length that Joe Brito should be getting the look at times over Chico. What if we put them both up front for the time being? Like, is that the answer? Does Chico need a partner in crime? And are we doing a disservice to where we can say, hey, like, we're going to give you everything you need to be successful, and if you still can't produce for this team, then that truly is on you at this point, and we need to have a hard conversation about your contribution to this team.
I mean, you want to set up players to be successful, and if Chico can only be successful by playing off of another striker, I mean, you could try that with, you know, Joe Brito, but the reality is Joe Brito's not really a striker either. He's very much a second forward, a cam kind of, you know, it almost in some ways it feels like they would be kind of playing a similar position, in a sense of Chico needs to play off another striker who would be quote unquote leading the line, right? And he can be right there behind him to kind of clean up some of those chances to poach on those second balls. You know, I don't know if JJ can be that guy. Feels like we've never really gotten them enough time together to see if that can work.
They have not done well either as a partnership so far. In the less than 900 minutes they've been on the pitch together across all comps, there's only been, I think, two goals produced, and through direct linking up between the two of them. Like, this isn't a case of JJ trapping the ball, playing the hold-up role, and then finding, you know, a pass to Chico to score. That's usually come in the run of play at momentum from a Quisera or a Fusan on the wings. So I agree with you. I guess the problem is we don't have a backup striker right now. Chico has to be the man. And when you look at it from what we have and where we need to go, if it's not a partnership, you know, how do we make teams fear our front line? Because right now, you know, we said it earlier, Pittsburgh and maybe these other teams, they're not afraid of letting Rhode Island FC have the ball. Well, they're especially not afraid of letting Chico take a look at goal, right? Maxi Rodriguez got triple contained last week. Anytime he had the ball into the past the middle third, Pittsburgh was locking him down. Chico, one striker, they don't care. Keep a zone defense on him as he gets closer and closer. Shut out the lane. But they're not afraid of Chico right now. So what do we do about that? If it's not Brito, what do you do? You can't say go get another player at this moment in time. What do you do?
you have to try and get through to him. I don't really know the answer. I mean, this is something coach is going to have to decide. Maybe you take him out. Maybe you try Joe Brito. You just try and just kind of play almost like a false nine in that way. They've been enjoying lots of possession, lots of passing, trying to kind of, you know, work their way into something that we've seen, maybe some kind of, I don't want to say ticky-tacka style, but something a little bit more intricate play as opposed to just whipping in some crosses. Try and get maybe Noah and Quisera and Maxi kind of more involved in the attack. It's tough to say. I think if it was that easy, I think coach would just flip a switch and we'd be fine. We wouldn't be arguing about this.
And you know what? That's the biggest vindication is as well. I see the chat. I think we've got like 60 comments now since I last looked at it, and I'm trying to catch up. The one thing is that everyone is right to complain that this team needs to improve, but there's no answer right now other than Chico has to be the man. He's got to learn how to be the guy and show up big, or we wait till JJ is healthy in the next few weeks, and then we find out what our opportunities can look like from there. But if Chico's not willing to take the step up, and I said this on Kevin's Face, I have heard from around the club that Chico has the longest contract in terms of total player tenure on this team. It's either as long or longer than Koke's, which was the one we knew the most about. And that would make sense considering Koke was signed before he ever left the Loyal. We get Chico into the preseason, basically, after medical. He's the golden boot winner the last year. Obviously, unless you're throwing cash out, you're throwing contract length. So there's a real possibility that he is our most longest-termed player in Rhode Island FC right now, which means it's not a problem that fixes itself, you know, at the end of the year. My guess is that Chico and Koke were on both three-year contracts. I can't confirm that, but they probably both have three plus ones. And so, you know, that means that if we don't solve this problem now, we can't afford to take the financial hit. We'd have to figure out a trade. I don't want to trade Chico. I want to fix Chico. I want to make him work in this squad. But right now, no one has the answers, and they've got to figure it out.
The worst thing would be to then trade Chico to someone else who changes him back to old Pittsburgh Chico, who goes on a tear and destroys everyone, right? Like, that would be the worst timeline.
Tim McDuff says JJ needs a lifetime contract after he named his son. Did you see that, by the way? We didn't really report that. Did you see the name that he put in?
No.
You got to go look it up. He threw a nod to Rhode Island. So okay. That was probably the coolest thing that I've seen. I mean, you talk about a player who plays for the badge. Like, that's a big deal. That's a huge, huge deal. So.
Okay. I'll have to check that out. I'll look it up later.
You really don't know?
I don't have an Instagram or whatever. I assume that's what everyone where everyone does this stuff. The other ones are just mostly nonsense or like news pieces. I really haven't seen it.
I was hoping you would guess. Is it quad, right? Because trip is the third. So I was hoping you would at least go with the is it quad? But I guess we can't all. I guess we can't all have that. So, but his,
you know,
his
I've first never been name, with the quickness.
Fine, that's fine. His first name is Rhodes, so like it doesn't get better than that. So, nice. Not Rhodey. Yeah. Rhodey's going to be short. So Jason's got it in the chat. It'll be Rhodey for short. But anyways, so little Rhodey now here, soon to be the best striker Rhode Island FC has ever had. Give it, 16 years, and he'll blow Kevin Ardui out of the water. Let's move into our preview. Guess what, Jason? We're playing this team again this week. How about that?
Do we have to?
Yes, we do. We do have to. I'm sorry. It's not my choice. Let's talk about the table standings here. Jaeger Cup. I'm excited. The more this is kind of settled into position, at first, I'm not going to lie, I thought this was a bit of a gimmick. And I was like, okay, like inner cup play, fine, whatever. But like, I'm starting to get on board with taking a shot at glory. And it's not, Jason, because we're in first place. Obviously, that can all change this weekend. I'm just starting to fall more and more in love with this format. Currently, we do hold down Group 4 in first place, earning ourselves a seat into the knockout soccer if the results were to hold over today with our first win. Interestingly enough, not only do we have that first win, but as a recap from our game against Westchester, we also do have one of the highest goal differentials thanks to 4 goals being knocked in against the New York side a little earlier this month. Interestingly, with Pittsburgh and Rhode Island, we are both now 2 teams that have not yet played a home game inside the Jägermeister Cup. So this will be Pittsburgh's first look at that. They lost their first game against Detroit City away. It was a 1-0 loss. I look back at that formation, and it's difficult to predict how teams will change their style and their approach, you know, a month removed. But Bob Lilly didn't really change his team. I know we talked in the preview last week that a lot of the players signed in the offseason were depth pieces, but you know, Lilly may change the formation and adjust one player here and there, but primarily he's found, I'd say, like his starting 9, if not his full starting 11. I do have a couple of rotations here just because of what we saw in that first round of Jägermeister, but this isn't like an Open Cup game if you're a full MLS side and going, okay, we're going to play the entire B squad minus 1 or 2 players. Obviously, Pittsburgh has been dangerous in some of these inner cup games so far. More specifically, back to the Open Cup, where they were the last team after having fallen last week. I think it was actually Kaylor, if he's still on, I see him here, where he said the most dangerous version of a Bob Lilly Riverhounds team is when they lose midweek and they're out for blood on that next game. So I'm just so glad that we were able to help give that to the Pittsburgh side last week. You know, when you look at this, Detroit City's doing a phenomenal job. They were able to get their first win against this group in Jägermeister play. We aren't, you know, we're not running on all cylinders right now. We've just seen this format. If you're a fan coming into this match on either side, are you expecting more of the same, or are you expecting this to be teams setting up in a different chess play? Like, we're not playing the Queen's Gambit here. We're going to do the Russian oligarchy defense move now. Like, I think I just made something up. But, like, are we, like, should we be expecting something different from either one of these sides coming into this week?
It's interesting because the way that the rules in this competition are set up is to, right, there's no extra time. You have to win. They encourage scoring goals. And these are just things that maybe don't align with Pittsburgh, right? Pittsburgh is like, no, we're gonna frustrate you. We're going to make your life really difficult, and we'll maybe get one scrappy goal and move on to next week. Right. Or we'll take the draw. I was like, well, you can't have a draw in this match. So I don't think that we'll necessarily see a different version of them, but it'll be interesting if they just look at this as just an extra match to get some rotation out. You know, I wonder how Bob Lilly views this competition. Is this something they look at and say, okay, well, this is an opportunity for silverware, because it is. But is that something that Bob Lilly will go for? Or does he looking at, well, we got a win against Rhode Island. We are looking towards improving our league form to try and get into a better position. So, I mean, it's tough to say. I wouldn't be surprised if we see very similar squads go out against each other again here, with RAFC looking to try and get their kind of first victory or even first goal against the Bob Lilly side. You know, I would expect to see a little bit of rotation on Rhode Island. I would still imagine, like, we'll see Lee will still be our cup keeper, right? So yeah. Outside of that, it's hard to say how many actual changes. But I mean, we talked about earlier, but maybe does Amos Shapiro-Thompson get a go at it? Can he, you know, crack that midfield?
Well, it's such an interesting thought experiment, because on one hand, Bob Lilly doesn't need to rotate anything, right? He has a established team. There's a week break between these games. We talked about match fitness and like the cyclical nature of it. for the Miami reschedule earlier, you want your players playing. You don't owe it to any group to like play the B squad, especially when you're what, four games removed from a hardware to be earned and won for your team. And then in addition to that too, like each of these teams in the championship will play at least one USL one side. So if you were going to reserve those auxiliary players, that would happen for your Hearts of Pine, your Westchester groups. When you get the looks at them, you don't need to conserve or worry about that since these games are replacing four games in the regular season. I expect both of these coaches to take, you know, every precaution to set up for success versus worrying about fatigue on players' legs or just making commitments outside of a keeper where you say, hey, like you're the right person for it. More interestingly, I think Kano has more pressure on him to try to solve for it since the results last week didn't work in his favor. I would be curious if Kano walked away from that game feeling like there were positives. I don't really feel like there were many that weren't what Bob Lilley had kind of prescribed or allowed to happen. And simultaneously, like, does Bob Lilley, did he see something? I see in the chat, Kevin writes that Bob Lilley talked about how there won't be any squad changes. Maybe that's true. I don't know if Bob Lilley is like a gambler, but like also I can tell you how hard it is to get the injury report from Kano because he wants every advantage before the hour before that starting 11 has to go out so that he doesn't have to worry about how their teams are going to set up against each other. So that's an interesting part to it. I do think this is going to be a little bit of a technical adjustment here. I think even if we see these same starting 11s, you're not going to see the same approach. You're not going to see the same style. And you're not going to see the same tactics because one side needs to counter and the other side needs to make sure that they don't get countered. So it's interesting. I've got a little bit of change in the Pittsburgh side based on their previous Jägermeister game, as well as like there were some players that I think if they were healthy would have edged out some of the starters. But we can get into that here in a second. Why don't we start with the Rhode Island FC side? So why don't you actually let's go through the injury report real fast. Isaac Yanking, as far as I'm concerned, we are T-minus 72 hours before
he was ortho. Apparently seen in training today, according to some pictures on Instagram or something.
Well, I mean, he's been in training, light contact for a while now. So, he told us his clean bill of health would be 531. So basically, as far as I'm concerned, by next week's game, he is ready to at least be available. Again, we don't want to rush these things. So I still don't think we'd actually see him unless we're that desperate. I don't think we'd see him till like July. And then of course you've still got Hugo Bacharach getting closer. I think he's about 2 weeks out, but this has been a moving target. We were told 2 months ago that he was 1 month out and it just continues to expand for a date to be thrown at us. And then it missed the mark entirely. I don't know if that means it's an aggravated injury, if it was longer than they thought, or there's some conservative projections that the doctors aren't seeing what they'd like to see from a physio standpoint. So that's been interesting. JJ, we saw him in light jogging last week after Evan's report before the game. So we were told he should be about 2 weeks, T-minus 2 weeks. Again, I'd say give it 4 to 5 before we see him fully fit. Mark Ibarra, Danny Rivera, they've been fully cleared. Like in terms of the conversations I've had with them, they've been available for selection. Mark Ibarra dressed, I think, for the Monterey Bay game, wasn't selected. These two players have been available to play, but have yet not been cleared from the availability report. I've got this ironic like desire, and it's too soon, especially for Rivera, having not yet played any minutes this year for the team. But we said it on the Monday mailbag. How great would it be to have three Riverhound players take on 11 other Riverhound players and just see if they can unlock the keys to Lily Ball from the Rhode Island FC side of things. Like that's what I'm all about.
Is that the solution to beat Bob Lilley? You must be Bob Lilley.
Exactly. So we already kind of did this for the wrong Wednesday, but run fans and listeners through what we think will be that starting 11.
Yeah, so we think Kano will stick with Jackson Lee as the cup keeper. Outside of that, maybe not so much change here, but back line consisting of Aldair Sanchez, Aime Mabika. We think Karifa Yao might get a chance to get back into that back line, and then finishing that off there with some Frank Nodarse, Zach Haravo and Clay Holstad in midfield, with the attacking midfielders consisting of Noah Fuson, Maxi Rodriguez, and Jojay Quizera, and then the one and only Chico up top.
I think really this is Kreefa Yao's moment to shine, to show why he deserves to be in the starting 11. I think if we see Quisera just give a solid 90 minutes and leave it all on the pitch, then that really means we're going to have that disconnected midfield of a high front press. And then I just don't see the speed between Mabika and Yao. So I look at this as kind of like one of those separated compartmentalizations of a low block so that nothing can get past the two center backs. And then like that high press line, and then that midfield double pivot will really be on the cleanup responsibility. Something we saw Mark Ibarra do all season last year. Also, because we can get anything wrong any given day. It could be Shapira Thompson's match. It could be Brito's, because Chico's got, you know, he's on the off and off right now. But all in all, is this the team, Jason, that's going to find the back of the net for Rhode Island FC at this point?
I hope so. Maybe being back in, was it Highmark Stadium? Maybe that will kind of, Chico will get some nostalgia there and kind of remember the his old stomping grounds and maybe put one in the back of the net.
Chico has a super fan from all the way back at his time in St. Louis. There's a really touching story on USLChampionship.com last year from Nicholas Murray, a fan that he made at his time with St. Louis City when they were still in the USL. And this young kid followed him through his journey to Pittsburgh. And I would imagine that if this young fan is able to watch a game of Chico's, he's going to be there at Highmark. So maybe Chico will take things personally and score for his super fan. But hey, you know, the player we didn't talk about is Koke Vegas. He's either going to get a much needed break here this week, because with Jackson Lee, you know, you probably have Will Meyer dress and go along and travel. So Capitan may be able to get a week off and be a dad for a bit, or we see Koke Vegas finally is resume the role of striker for this team, as everyone was clamoring for in Westchester. So maybe that's the other answer. All bets are off.
Maybe Aimé Mabika could pretend he's Peter Crouch. We could put him up top.
At that point, you just the accurate crosses works if Mabika's standing at the box at all times. I'll take it. Let's get into this Pittsburgh Riverhounds side. Again, slight modification from last week. Primarily, if you had noticed, we had it in a 3-4-2-1 last week. Kind of a little bit of an inversion here now to a 3-4-1-2. I do think that, well, one, I believe that just like Kano, Bob Lilly will reward Jacob Randolph in the keeper. He was their keeper for the opening round of the Jägermeister Cup. And again, it's one of those great opportunities to get looks. Could be completely wrong. And when you have a goalkeeper as good as Eric Dick, maybe you don't take a chance with something like that, especially with 5 saves against this club just a few days ago. In the back line, a little bit of a change with a slide up. So Sean Suber moves to the left back side with Beto Jadrick now in the center back role. And I've got Elil Osamanu on the right center back side. So Osamanu being the newcomer on the back line. And then you've got that midfield four of Perrin Barnes, Jackson Walty. I think Bradley Sample will get a start in this game this time around just because he's been so good against Rhode Island FC. And I think he deserves the nod. Luke Biasi out on that left wing. And then you've got Danny Griffin, of course, the cam in the middle. He can do so much with so little. And then I've got Aiden O'Toole, the newcomer on the striker side. It could just as easily be Burton Jackson. You could even put in Junior E2 and put him out on the right side. He's more of a defensive wingback / midfielder, but he's got the speed. And then you've got Robbie Mertz, instead of being central, kind of drifting out to the left side in a true striker system. I think this puts the Riverhounds in just enough of a dangerous change to kind of disrupt whatever Rhode Island FC wants to plan. Again, we've got some of the listeners saying Bob Lilly's already committed that he won't change anything, but I'll believe it when I see it. From this Pittsburgh side, you know, looking at this, I guess the questions here really become, we don't know if they're going to rotate, but we do know that both these coaches are going to prioritize the Jägermeister Cup. If you're Kano, knowing that you've got Hartford and Hearts of Pine, not an easy game in the Open Cup, and Hartford, they're always going to show up, whether they get a result against us or not, is the...
See that wild game 4-4 against Indy last night?
Oh my gosh. Too many penalties, and the fact that Hartford went up, then lost control of the game, only to equalize. Like, I've always felt bad for Hartford fans, but now I feel even more so. Even if it wasn't a away game for them, that's a tough time. I'm just saying there's no guarantee of points in any stage of this group round. These points are probably some of the most important points, whether it's one, two, or all three. We can't walk away with zero. Do you change how much are you prioritizing this if you're Conor Smith right now?
I think it's really important for them to look at this as an opportunity to kind of get some silverware in their second year. Started off very well. I think this is probably going to be our toughest Jägermeister Cup match. I think, you know, you would have mentioned, Portland Hearts of Pine are no pushovers. But I think that being said, they, you know, the Pittsburgh Riverhounds are like our arch nemesis at this point. So I think that Kano is going to take this match very seriously. And I think that he probably took a hard look at last weekend's match to see what kind of tweaks and changes and alterations that he could, you know, make within, obviously, you know, short turnaround to try and get something out of this match.
I agree. I think really what it'll come down to is the qualification of Eric Dick. You know, we mentioned it a second ago, will Lily change out or not? This team is completely different if they're Dickless. If they have Eric Dick on the field, they are an unstoppable force. And we see it defensively in their stats right now. You know, we talked earlier about how Rhode Island FC has only given up 10 goals this season, but so has Pittsburgh. Right now, tied for the second best defense in the league alongside Loudoun United, who's a top three in the league right now, and us. And then the only other team that has a better one is Lou City. Quietly, like, I mean, everyone expects Lou City to be good, but with all the attention that Cal Jennings is bringing into Charleston, I don't think a lot of people have realized that Lou City has only been scored on 5 times in the regular season so far.
That's wild.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone's in love with the Jedi Padawan scoring, you know, 20 goals already by himself. But Lou City has only allowed 5 goals. So defensively, both of these teams are well positioned. But I think the X factor here, unlike us, you can almost change in and out one of our defenders, and it's kind of the same. I think even if you took Koke out, who, by the way, up for save of the week. So if you haven't voted for him yet, go vote for Koke. I think if we win this, that'll be 4 weeks in a row we've won a goal of the week or a save of the week. So please keep the momentum high. And for those of you doing the hard work, if you know, you know, thank you for your services. We appreciate that. But I think on the other side with the Riverhounds, Eric Dick is the key piece to this defense, right? Like, they are a tough team to crack, but it all starts with Dick.
Yeah, it's very frustrating to, you know, finally find that crack in the defense, and it's like, oh, they have a all-star keeper right behind it to kind of clean it up. So
yeah. And then the kind of real question then, Jason, we talked about, is Chico the guy? We think Chico needs to be the guy. We talked about Noah at length. He's only got one goal in 805 minutes. Quisera's at zero. Maxi, you know, not huge numbers themselves. If there's going to be a player that needs to step up in this game, who's it going to be, or is it always got to be that it's Chico?
I think we definitely want it to be Chico. I think that would really kind of could help our goal scoring form kind of get in gear. I think it would be great to, you know, for a boost of confidence, especially against his old team. You know, obviously you've mentioned some other kind of big names there. I would like to see some big performances from Jojea, from Maxi, and from Noah. I mean, realistically, one of them needs to put the ball in the back of the net. At this point, we have not scored against Bob Lilly's squad. So we just need to get one to kind of give ourselves the confidence and say, okay, this team is not impenetrable. It is possible to score against them.
Do you think at this point it's more than playing for the points? It's more than playing for the group stage? Like, at this point, this is now the team we have, you know, if we lose this game and we fail to score, this will be the team that has had our number the most. Right now, they're tied with Loudoun in the term of like teams that we have struggled to perform against. But if this happens, this now will cement them in our like first place problem position. How important is it, like, we go beyond just the point spread here and we play for something more like the badge or pride in this situation?
Yeah, definitely. I think that when you frame it that way, that they would be our arch nemesis, right? No wins against them. And I think that being able to come up victorious against them would really kind of uplift the team and say, you know what, if we can score against this team, we could score against anybody. I mean, they've except already done it. Yeah, you know, that's fine. They're gonna unfortunately fold or something anyway. There's no money. Ooh. There.
Ouch.
Hope not. But hope not.
But you know, Jason in the chat writes in, you know, I still have more animosity for Detroit and Hartford. I think that's right. Detroit and Hartford are teams I just hate at this point. Pittsburgh is a team I have to golf clap respect that they keep spanking us, and I want that to be fixed. I guess the question then is, if we do get the win here in this group stage, does it count? Because like I could see the narrative going, well, yeah, it was group. It's like it was like semi-open cup, beat us in the championship, and then we'll talk. Like, does it get an asterisk if we get this victory, or are our problems evaporated?
I don't think the players will think of it that way. If they, you know, if they get the win, they get the win. That's all that matters at that point. You know, we could still pull the statistic out and say, oh, we haven't beat them in league play. Well, that's fine. We beat them away in a cup. It's possible to beat them. So unless they literally field their like U12 squad and they say, well, you beat up on a bunch of little kids, like, it doesn't matter. As long as you get the W, that's all that matters at that point. Because they'll remember that next time we go and face them again.
That's fair. And then, you know, the most interesting part, talking about a tactics change, looking at the percentages of what fans believe will happen, 43% think the Riverhounds will win at home, 57% still delusional or just completely forever faithful. Not sure which one it is at this point. But what's important is neither one of these sides can go for the draw. And I was happy to see on FotMob as well as SofaScore, no one put in, I don't know if maybe it was like an option that was disabled, but everyone recognized that you can't draw in this game. With that being said, when you talk tactically here, two defensive teams, historically low scoring affairs, even when one team gets the advantage over the other, but this shouldn't be a barn burner in terms of a high scoring affair. Knowing that you're playing first and foremost to contain and go, not for the draw, but like to keep it scoreless until you can score, this has the writings of a 0-0, 1-1 game all over it. If we get to penalties, like, does coach need to think, you know, forward here and change tactics to be a little bit more explosive and try to go for the goal? Or is it better to hold on, go for the 1 point, and then get to a nail-biting PK shootout at the end of the game?
I mean, I hate penalty shootouts when they involve teams that I support, but hey, why not?
Jaeger shots, Jaeger shots if it goes to PKs. That's the rule. That was the promise that we made to each other many moons ago.
I already feel it.
I will say this, though. I like the format, by the way. I've been an advocate of the shootout era since I heard about it, and I love that MLS Next Pro does it. I want to bring that here, so I'm completely for it. I even think, Jason, until you get to the final in U.S. Open Cup, because there are always midweek games and to save legs, I think those should go to shootouts after 90 as well. I think that is the way of the future for everything that is not regular season performance.
Yeah, I'm all about that. Those extra times are pretty dull usually.
Would you do the one where the keeper can run out at the same time and go from like 40 yards out, or would it just be standard PKs?
Those are hilarious, but no, I would just go with standard PKs.
Okay, fair. All right, Jason, what does Rhode Island FC need to do to get this win and to see these skeletons get, you know, put back in the closet?
Yeah, so we've seen RFC enjoy a lot of possession this season so far. I think that if we probably see that continue, I think they're going to need to have a little bit of patience here. It's kind of a key factor against an organized team like this, against the Riverhounds. We talked earlier about making sure you try and create good opportunities for yourself. You know, if anything, keeping the ball at that point too for long sustained periods of possession can actually kind of frustrate teams too, and kind of open passing lanes, and then exploit the defense by kind of moving the ball. They're gonna want to try and make sure though that they have a little more like pace and kind of movement behind the ball. Don't just dote on the ball too much. Kind of move it around with purpose. Try and really drift and pull and drag that Riverhounds defense apart as much as they can. And then when they see that opportunity for the pass, they need to make that killer pass to try and get in behind there and try and catch them off guard before they can reset.
I've got two things, and they're both kind of the same. Take shots at this point. I mean, you look back at this game last weekend, the only goal scores off of a deflection-esque blocked line of sight at range that like normally has no business going in, but that only manifests if you take the shot from the first place, right? So we saw the success against Tampa. We can be dangerous further from the net if we get the looks. Obviously, Pittsburgh is going to want to try to shut that down as much as possible, but we just have to be brave enough to take shots. And, you know, talking back to Chico's conversion rates and his accuracy, one of the things is like, he, again, 13 shots total, though, so far. JJ was already at 15. JJ's shooting accuracy is 20%. But everyone in the chat tonight was like, we need JJ back. We need JJ, right? Like, JJ's not afraid to try something. And I think that's where the difference for Chico can be in his game, is just try. You know, just put a shot on and get comfortable. And maybe it comes back to that quantity thing that you were talking about, how when Rhode Island FC starts to exceed, you know, 15 shots for the game, that's when like the goals can start to kind of manifest for themselves. So I'd like to see Chico, if he does get the start, I'd like to see him be a little braver, and just maybe he doesn't need to get the ball that final step. You know, he doesn't have to do a lot of overwork or overthinking, and just like as soon as the ball's at his feet, just take a shot. Who knows what that spill out, that deflection, whatever that could look like. So I think that's, we need a little bit more than just Poacher Chico right now. And I think that even though that might not be his game right now, that's the game he has to play. And then speaking of shooting, again, there's a theory in my mind right now that this is going to go to PKs. And we haven't talked about it in a long time, but we are not good at penalties, especially if we get to the 90th minute and we've rotated some of our alternates in. This could be an interesting thing. So hopefully Kano remembers that this game can't end in a draw, and he's practicing shooting this week for that extra point pickup. Nothing would be more frustrating. I don't mind if a keeper makes a save, but if you look back at the history of our team, most of our misses have been because we couldn't put it on target. So that is something I do not want to see happen for these guys, because nothing is worse from a confidence destroyer than losing a game where points are on the table because you can't put your shot on target. So PKs, and Chico needs to shoot more. And the rest of the team, Fusan and Quisera, they need to have big games as well. Fusan needs to get back in this mix, and Quisera needs to have the confidence going into his time with Rwanda the following week. So want to see more from that forward three. Let's throw Maxi in there too, and let's just see a little bit more work out of those guys. And this should be a promising game. Hopefully there's the Jaeger Cup magic, and that way they can all take shots at glory, and you don't have to take shots for a shootout. So that's where we're at. Do you want to go predictions, or like, just let's not even jinx it at this point?
I predict we're going to score a goal finally against Pittsburgh Riverhounds.
I love it. Hey, you start small, and then your expectations can only be hurt so much. Let's get into the watch party information. So, Jason, before we even jump into it, Champions League final is this Saturday. I know Defiance is doing a combination watch party, first for the Champions League and then going into the watch party for the Jägermeister Cup. So two soccer tournaments in a single day. Who could ask for more? Do you have a team? Like, do you have a feeling on who's going to win Champions League?
Between PSG and Inter? It's tough to say. I My head would tell me PSG, but I feel Inter is a very stubborn and tough team to play against, and they will not make it easy for them. And I could very well, I could see it kind of going either way. I kind of want PSG to win just for the hilarity that Mbappe leaves PSG to go to Real and then they win it without him. Like that's the timeline I'm here for.
Like Tottenham winning their first trophy in 17 years after Kane leaves.
Yeah, I mean, hey, they both win trophies. You know,
that's all that matters.
Yeah.
The correct answer, though, by the way, was the winner isn't Milan or PSG. The winner is every fan getting to watch Linkin Park sing the opening show for the Champions League, Jason. That's the real winner is Nu Metal is back alive with a female lead singer, and that's all that matters, my friend.
It's the friends we made along the way.
Well, I hope that you have a great time along with all of the Forever Faithful and anyone else that's curious about it. And I want to say this, you know, about the watch parties, because we've seen a bunch of new people in the Discord by proxy. We've seen new fans come online. So thank you for continuing to follow along on this journey with us. But remember, if you're not an official member of Defiant 1636, you're not excluded from the biggest watch party in Rhode Island FC's kind of soccer landscape. You're always more than welcome to go to the guild and watch with the group. It's not that kind of thing. A couple of weeks ago, we talked to a fan and they were watching, but they were on the other side of the guild, like the brew hall. They're like, you can come over, and they're like, oh, that's for the Defiance. Like, we're not members. Like, no, please come and hang out. So please, if you're listening along and you're not a Defiance member, you are still more than welcome to go to those watch parties and go watch the Champions League. And then, of course, watch the Riverhounds versus Rhode Island FC on Saturday, May 31st at 7 p.m. The game's going to be at Highmark. And of course, if you're watching along and you're not traveling, which is the majority of everyone listening, you can tune in first on Nesson Plus, of course, ESPN Plus, and then do yourself a favor, mute your televisions, put on your smart speaker or your phone radio app and put on 790 The Score for Tom Quinlan and Nick G on the call, and give yourself the right Rhode Island FC flair. I'll be curious how distraught Tom Quinlan is if his Knicks, the situation with his Knicks, like it may be the saddest play-by-play we ever hear, but that's for Saturday to figure out. Jason, am I missing anything other than Giroud apparently is a Riverhounds fan now. So we've got lots of LAFC alumni in our chats these days. So that's fantastic to see. I never pegged Giroud as a
I knew Olivier Giroud was a USL sicko.
Maybe that's where he'll actually retire. I'm assuming Giroud then also is a PSG wants for the Champions League, but that's for the chat. So let's get out of here. And or actually, any final thoughts before we leave?
No, looking forward to taking a shot at glory this weekend. Love me some cup action. So hey, everyone, make sure to check out our friends over at the Blazing Musket for all of your New England soccer coverage. You can follow us on Twitter, Threads, TikTok, and Blue Sky at RAFC Podcast. We have an Instagram at Raising Anchor and RaisingAnchorPodcast.com. This Olivier Giroud thing is just nonsense. People like actually just make these fake accounts just to come on here and troll us. I would love for Olivier Giroud to be USL sicko. I'm just not buying that timeline. At least anchors up, not, everybody.
Anchors up, and at least it's not Greg Vanny's 16-game losing streak. We'll leave it at that.